Okay, so we're going to start from the bottom of Tezvav Amud Beis. Okay, the bottom of the last line on Tezvav Amud Beis, where we had the where we're learning is that Reish Lakish was of the opinion that Reish Lakish was of the opinion that we treat glass materials like cheres, like earthenware, that just like with respect to earthenware, again, we're not talking about if they have non-kosher food that's absorbed. We're talking about if there's tumah, if there's ritual impurity, something that's tameh that touches them. So we said that Reish Lakish says we treat glass like earthenware, because just like glass, it's formed from chol, from sand, so then we treat it like earthenware, okay? And so that essentially, once it's tameh, once it attracts tumah, you can't fix it. That's what we're up to. So the last two words on Daf Tesvam and Beis. Again, people should feel free to ask questions or make comments. But if you're not, then just please put yourself on mute. Okay? But when you want to say something and ask a question, make a comment, just take yourself off mute. That's worked well in the past. Elamiata. So now we're going to say, if you want to say the reason that a glass vessel receives that the laws of being makabel tuma is that it becomes tameh, it's similar to a kli cheres, to an earthenware vessel. So loli tamu migabon, then the kli zechuchis, the glass keli, the glass vessel, the rule should be that if they attract tuma, if they contract tuma from the outside, then the inside should not become tameh, because that's the rule for kli cheres. Alama tanan, why do we learn that kli cheres and kli neser tumasan shava mitamim umitamim miavirehem? So earthenware vessels, or I guess it's similar, or white dirt, or white, similar to kli cheres. So these kalim, their tuma, their ritual impurity is the same, whether they themselves receive tuma or whether they cause other things to become tameh. The umitamim meachorehem, if they can become tameh, if there's some kind of indentation in the back of the kli. So in the, there's a chakika, there's an engraving in the back of the kli. So for that, they would become tameh. But ve'im mitamim migabehem. But when it comes to kli cheres, when it comes to an earthenware vessel, if something that is tameh touches the outside of a kli cheres, of an earthenware vessel, then it doesn't render those things that are in the inside of the kli cheres, of the earthenware vessel, ushvirasan mitaharatam. And when you break the kli cheres, then it becomes tahor. And so what do we see from this Mishnah? The Gemara says that we can infer from this Mishnah that kli neser, kli cheres, hu detumasam shaveh, avomidi achri alo, that this rule, all these rules by kli cheres, only apply to kli cheres, but not anything else. In other words, this Mishnah implies that only with respect to a kli cheres do we say that if the back becomes tameh, then what's on the inside, what's on the outside, that only with respect to kli cheres do we say that what's on the outside, that if the outside becomes tameh, the inside does not become tameh, but we don't say that with respect to other things like klei zechuchis, like glass utensils. So if indeed we are treating klei zechuchis, glass utensils, like earthenware utensils, why are the rules not similar? So the Gemara answers, Omri, kevin dechi nishtabru yesh lahem takana, shavinu ki kli matachos. That since the truth is glass kalim, glass utensils are not exactly like earthenware utensils, that if glass utensils become broken, so you can actually fix them, and that way they are similar to metal. So since you can fix them, so they're really like an in-between now, the Gemara wants to say. They're sort of in-between. That on the one hand, they come from sand, so they're like earthenware vessels, and therefore they can become tameh, and there's no way to fix them through putting them, let's say, in a mikvah. However, they are similar in some respects to a metal utensil, and how are they like metal utensils? That you can put them together. If they're broken, you can put them together. I guess through fire, you can form them back together. So therefore, shavinu kikli matachos. So therefore, in that respect, we were stringent and to treat them like metal. In that the outside, if the outside becomes tamei, the inside also becomes tamei. So the Gemara says el miyata. Yeah, but if you want to say that. If you want to make them stringent, like metal utensils, then they should return to their old state of tuma, like metal utensils. What does that mean? They should return to their old state, like metal utensils. Now we're going to see in a second what this means. There's a Mishnah which says the following. Clay matachos. So let's say you have a metal utensil. Pshutehem, if they don't have what's called the base kibbol, which is sort of like what's it called? Like a bowl area. Like putam means it's a flat surface, a flat kli, as opposed to something which is rounded a little bit, which is circular, so you can put things inside of them. So clay matachos, right? Metal kalim putam umekablehem tumeim. So all metal utensils can become tamei if they come in contact with something. They come in contact with a sheretz, or they come in contact with a dead sheretz, or with a nevela, or a corpse. So they all can become tamei. Now nishbaru, if the kalim break taharu, then all of a sudden the pieces are now ritually pure. They become tahor. Now, the Gemara says, Chazar va'asar mehen kelim. Let's say you take these pieces and you put them back together and you form a new kli. So, Chazru l'tumasan ha'yishana. They revert back to their original state of tuma. It's not like once they're broken and then the pieces are tahor, but now if you fix them into a kli again, then they revert to their original state of tuma. We'll see why in a few minutes. Now, but the ilu gabe clay zchuchis tanan clay eight and clay or clay eight and clay zchuchis pshutayim tahorim umakablim tamehim. When it comes to other utensils like wood, like I guess leather, bone, and also glass, that's our point here, glass. So they are that if they don't have what's called a base kibble, something like holding it like a bowl or a spoon. If it's a flat surface, then they are tahor. Then they can't become tamehim. But if they have, it's like a bowl, a pot, where they have something that you know you can put food inside of it. So then they can become tameh. Now nishbru, if they're broken, taharu, they become tahor. If you put them back together, then they're not tameh. But they can become tummy in the future. So what do we see from here? Mikan lahaba in lamafreya lo. Only in the future they become tummy, but not retroactively. So again, so what's the difference between metal and glass for our purposes? A metal kli, if it's tummy. A metal kli that's tummy. If it's broken, it's tahar. And then if you put the pieces back together and form a kli again, a new kli, then it reverts to its original tuma. But glass, it would not revert to its original tuma. So the Gemara is asking, if indeed we are saying that glass is like metal, in that, just like metal, if the outside becomes tummy, the inside becomes tummy. So why is it the same for? Then we say that's the same for glass. So if we're comparing metal to glass, why do we not compare metal to glass? Also in this instance, that if you put it back together, the glass should also become tummy. Why don't we say that? So the Gemara answers,
I don't understand the difference with a metal kli between it being broken and it not being broken, then according to tuma. If it's tame to begin with and it breaks, then it becomes tuma. So
No, I'm sorry. We're saying like this. A metal kli is tame. If it's broken into pieces, those pieces are tahor. The pieces are tahor. If you take those pieces and put them back together to reform a kli, then it reverts to its original state of tuma. But in its broken form, it is tahor. We will see soon why they made this. The rabbis made a gzeira. It really, according to the strict letter of the Torah, if once you break the kalim and the kli, the metal kli, it's tahor, and if you put it back together, it should also be tahor. Okay? However, the rabbis made a decree that if you put the pieces back together, then this reverted kli becomes tameh, and we'll see soon why. But in their broken state, the pieces are tahor. Everyone agrees to that.
Only the pieces are tahor, but if you put it back together, it's just as tameh as it had been.
Correct. As opposed to kli cheres, when if you put it back together, they're tahor. Okay, so the Gemara answers, Tumas kli zechuchis drabonon. The tuma of glass is only itself to begin with only a rabbinic tuma, v'tuma yeshana drabanan, and this halacha of what's called tuma yeshana, the old tuma reverts when you put the kli back together. That itself is only a rabbinic decree. So therefore, v'tuma doraisa chisuba. They only made this decree when it came to something that in its original state was only was a Torah prohibition, but not with a rabbinic prohibition. In other words, tuma for metal is only a Torah concept. So they made the decree of tuma yeshana on this type of material. But since glass to begin with is only rabbinic, so the rabbis didn't place this decree on this type of tuma. So then the Gemara asks, Pshutehem miha litame, if that's the case. So if that's the case, then the pshutim, a flat surface of glass, miha litame, that should become tame at the very least. Da pshute klei matochos deraisa ninu, since pshutim, now, the flat surface of metal is tame from a Torah perspective. So why don't we say then that a flat surface of glass should also be tame, right? So the Gemara says, "Avidu b'hu rabbonon hekera ki heche delo lisuf alaya trumo kadashim." The rabbis made glass have different rules than metal, so that you won't inadvertently burn Truma and Kachim. See, why am I saying this? See, here's the thing. There's a downside. Look, if the rabbis make something Tameh, so what does that mean? It means that if Truma, well, you would argue then, that if Truma or Kachim, like, you know, Korban meat, touches that Kli, then what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to burn it. So the halacha generally is that if you have, let's say, truma or kachim that touch something that's tameh on a Torah level, then of course you have to burn it. But now what if the rabbis say, well, we're going to treat this glass as being tameh because we want to be strict, right? There's a downside to that, because then what does that mean? That if truma touches it, okay, you can't eat it, but now you're going to burn it? That's a problem, because you're burning something. Okay, so the rabbis are making a stringency. But you see what they're doing now? Something, if glass on a Torah level is not tameh, and now you're burning truma, then what are you doing? You're burning truma, which is for touching something which on a Torah level is not tameh. So the rabbis wanted to basically make a distinction and say, you know what? We're making this gezeira, we're making this decree for glass. Okay, on a rabbinic level that it's tameh, but don't forget that it's not really tameh on a Torah level. So that by mistake, when truma comes in contact with glass that's tameh, all you're going to do is not eat the truma and let it rot and then throw it out once it's not fit for human consumption. But we need to show people that glass is different than metal, so that you don't inadvertently burn truma for coming in contact with it. So how did they do that? So they said that the glass has a different rule, that the flat surfaces of glass are not tame. And you could ask, why is that? Ah, I know why. Because it's only tame on a rabbinic level. In other words, that different halacha makes you realize that glass is actually different than metal. So we'll have some laws that are similar, but at the same time, people will realize, oh my gosh, the flat surfaces cannot become tame. Must be what? that it's not really tame on a Torah level, and therefore they're going to be careful that when truma touches it, yes, they won't eat the truma, but they won't burn the truma either. Okay?
Rabbi Muscat?
Yes. Yeah.
Can glass transmit tuma to something that is like tame according to a Torah level?
No,
can it make like liquids tame?
So I think on a rabbinic level it can. As far as I know, I believe on a rabbinic, glass cannot do anything on a Torah level. Glass to begin with is on a rabbinic level. So let's say you have a nevela, right? An animal that wasn't shechted properly. Okay? A dead animal. So that comes in contact with a glass material. So that can make Kalim Tame, so that can make the glass Tame. It would make glass Tame on a rabbinic level. And then I assume that the glass then can make, so the glass would be what's called a Rishon Letuma, and that can make foods and liquids Tame on a rabbinic level, but on a Torah level.
So then if those liquids or whatever came into contact then with Truma,
so that,
or Truma can only be...
No, that's fine. Right. No, that's right. Don't worry. By the way, it took me a long time to get this, so it's okay. It'll take a while.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. So it's not... So then if the glass kli touches food, so the food becomes a shady, and then if the shady then touches Truma, the Truma would become tame on a rabbinic level, and you wouldn't be allowed to eat it, but you would not be allowed to burn it because it only became tame on a rabbinic level. I just want to point out, I don't want to further confuse things, but I think in yesterday's daf, we dealt with, there were some cases where the rabbis treated certain doubtful situations as certain situations on a deraisa level. So there were some instances, and they are more the exception as opposed to the rule, where on a rabbinic level, it really should be, there were some rabbinic cases where the rabbis basically treated suffixes or doubts as certainties on a Torah level. But at least for our purposes, the glass would only make things tame on a rabbinic level, so that would mean don't eat the truma, but don't burn it. Okay?
Okay, so there's no case where even when it transmitted through something else first, you would burn truma as a result of glass having been tame.
Not to my knowledge. Yes.
Thank you.
Rabbi, what would happen with plastic?
I don't think.
Plastic can be reformed.
Right. So I don't know because Gemara doesn't talk about it. I would imagine that, I mean, they talk about plastic with respect to kashrus. And the rabbis, for the most part, rabbis don't make new gzeros. So in other words, they're not going to, new materials, they're probably not going, this wasn't existence in this time. So I don't think that they would, this material you could argue is similar, but we don't create new gezeros. We don't have the power nowadays to create new gezeros that didn't apply beforehand.
Would you have to tow about plastic bowls?
No, we don't. No, it's not. We don't have to tow plastic bowls.
Okay.
It's not. Okay. Okay. Rav Ashi Amar.
Can I interrupt you 1 second?
What?
I just want to take a step back.
Okay.
In terms of klei mateches,
right,
that is broken,
right,
the parts become tahar.
Right.
However, what if you rework the metal?
Right.
And create a different kli, different type of kli, but it still has a base kibul.
Yeah.
Would the tuma remain or not?
I think so. And the reason why I'm saying I think so, let's in the next amud, it tells you the case why they made this gzera, and it seems for the case that there were some changes in the nature of the metal material. And so based on, hold your thought, I'm not trying to shut you down, Cal. Hold your thought. I think that when we read on Amud Beis the case, or some of the cases relating to this gzera, it seems that even if you rework it in a different way, it would still be a problem. Okay, so we'll see the case in a bit. Okay, so move on to the next amud, Tezayim and Beis. Rav Ashi Amar La'olam L'Klei Cheres Dab. Rav Ashi gives a different answer. Really, glass is similar to earthenware. Uda Kakash Alach. And if you want to ask that if there the law is like Klei Cheres, Loli Tame Migaban, then it shouldn't become Tame from the outside to the inside. So they say, no, it's different. Glass is different. While Ho Venira Toho Kaboro. Since its inside is like its outside, In other words, since it's transparent, so therefore, what's the concern is that it looks, the Sfas Emes writes that essentially he argues this is he's saying that if someone sees the kli from a distance, right, and whatever they see that tuma touched the outside from a distance, they might think that what it actually touched the inside. So since it's transparent, so basically we're going to say that with glass, which is for the most part transparent, again, you said there are different types of glass, but since a lot of glass is transparent, that someone, an onlooker from the outside won't be able to tell the difference between something that's metallic from the outside or the inside. So therefore we said with glass, wherever it touches it, it will make it tummy. Okay. The Gemara now is going to continue. It's now going to talk about the clay batachlos. Why they made this gzera by metal. So Shimon Shatach tikin ksuba leisha v'gozo tuma clay batachlos. Shimon Shatach made it established a ksuba for a woman and made a decree on glass on metal kalim. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? Clay batachlos deraisin into metal utensils are Torah. Torah issue, deceive, as it's written, achas azav es akesef. We know that you have to do that. You have to immerse a kli in mechatas, in special water that's mixed with the ashes of the para aduma, to make it tahor if it came in contact with a corpse. We see that on a Torah level. In Bamidbar Lamed Aleph, Chav Bez and Chav Gimel, after the Bnei Yisrael fought with the Midianites. So what does it mean? What's the gzeira of that Shimon Shatach made for clay batachos? Lo nitzcha ela tuma yishana. So now, what was the gzeira? The tuma yishana that we're talking about. The Amar of Yehuda Barab, Maisa b'Sheltzion Habalka. So there's a story with Sheltzion the queen. So she was living in the days of Shimon Shatach. She'asa bishta livna. She made a party for her son. V'nitmu kol keila. What happened? All of her kelim became tamei. And when a kli becomes tameh from a corpse specifically, there are different ways you can become tameh. When a kli becomes tameh from, when a utensil becomes tameh from a corpse, so that's like an abatuma, so you need to, you need 7 days. It needs like special sprinkling, and it requires 7 days, you need to sprinkle from this Mayim Chayim, this water that's mixed with ashes from the Paraduma. You know, just like when you're Metaher, a person who becomes Tameh, right? So from being contact with a corpse, you need 7 days. So here, these Kalim need 7 days of Tahara. So what happened? She was making a wedding party, and she didn't have 7 days. So what'd she do? Shvarta unisantam latzoref. So she broke them and she gave them to a blacksmith to fix them. Verit Khan, and he what did he do? He melted some silver in the place where the break was. Vasavim Kim Khadashim, and he made new kalim. Okay? So that's what he did. He made a hole or whatever. He broke them to such an extent that they would be rendered ineffective as a kli. And then he filled it in with silver, with certain materials, and he created a new kli. The rabbi said, no, it's no good. They revert to their original state of tuma. My time, what's the reason they made this gezeira, this decree? Mishum geder mechatas naguba. Because they didn't want people to forget this concept of the ashes with the water, the mechatas that you should, the sprinkling. Because essentially, this is an easy fix, right? You break it a little bit, and then you can reuse it. But the concern was that if everyone used it, nobody would wait the 7 days. Now, let's say everyone would break the kli for like a short period of time in a way to fix it. So someone would say, oh yeah, I'm not going to break it. I'll just dip it in a mikvah. And I'll be good. And I won't wait 7 days. So that was the concern. And therefore they said that everyone has to wait 7 days. So the Gemara asked, Hadicha Lamad Da'amar, Lo Lecholat... I'm sorry?
Wouldn't that be true with all the other categories too, that people wouldn't wait 7 days and they would just put them back together?
Wait, no, I think that other, I mean, I think that if it comes...
A leather bone, all those other categories.
Oh, you're saying with other materials, right. if other metals, you're saying other metals.
Right, well, all the other categories.
Yes, oh, you're saying is it only, yeah, I don't know. So I'm not sure. Well, no, I think all those categories, all those things that for which are Mekabel Tumah, are you saying why is it only... Why is it only metal and other materials? So in that pasuk, hold on, one second. I think that rule, by the way, of the sprinkling is only with metals. The pasuk says, "Achas azav es akesed dechoshes barzel bedli and ofaras." So I think the rule of the sprinkling only for 7 days only applies to metal. I think so.
Because you don't have the rule of sprinkling.
Yeah, that's what I think so. Yeah, because that pasuk only deals with metals. Okay, so
aluminum. So if you had, for example, they didn't have aluminum then, but they had copper and bronze.
Yeah. So but your questions, by the way, are not brought with Tumah and Tahara because we don't have that. They ask these questions when it comes to, let's say, a Kohen. You know, you're burying a Kohen and going over a cemetery and the planes, the service of the planes, and they're made of aluminum. Does that apply to these things? So these are great questions. Maybe I'll do one of these for my 5 minute halacha piece. But these are questions. They're good questions about metal materials that are not one listed in the Torah. Okay, the Gemara asks, Hadicha Labad the Abar, Lolochola Tubos Abru, Ella Tubas Abes Bilvad Abru. So this is good according to the P that says that this only applies to that this halacha of the tumah that returns. It was only limited to someone who came in that the metal came in contact with the corpse. But el manda amar lachola tumos amar maika lemeimar. But according to the Tanakhama, the first opinion, who disagrees, who says that this halacha of tumah that reverts doesn't only apply if it came in contact with the corpse, but it applies to other types of tumah, even not a corpse. So why should that apply? Because there's no 7 day issue there. And as the only time you have to wait 7 days is in a situation where the metal came in contact with the corpse. So Abayomar, Gzera Shemalo Yikvenu Bichte Taraso. Abayi says that we don't like this whole thing of fixing because we're afraid that you're not going to make a hole large enough to make it tahor. The hole, I think, that has, in other words, how do you break a kli so now it's no longer tameh? It has to be the size of a pomegranate seed. So obviously it's very small. So the concern is that someone will break it, you know, even less than that, and they won't do a good job, and therefore we're not going to allow that as a fix because people were making mistakes with that. And Rav Amar, Gzera Sheva Yomu Tefila Bas Yoma Olalo. Rava says that I have a different concern, that maybe someone's going to say that the tefillah, even before sunset, works. What does that mean? That what's the halacha? The halacha is that if you fix the kli, right? Let's say you break the kli, then you fix it right away. It's good. So what's going to happen? Someone's going to see that, oh, I broke the kli, I fixed it, and now it's good right away. So they're going to say what? They're going to say that now if I immerse the kli in a mikvah, right? We're talking about if it doesn't touch a corpse. Yes, if it doesn't touch a corpse, just immerse it in a mikvah and wait till the evening. So if we say that you could break it and fix it and use it right away, so then they're going to say, oh, any time my kli comes in contact with something tameh, so what am I going to do? I'm going to dip it in mikvah and it will be good right away and I won't wait until sunset. So Gemara asks Mai Binayi, what's the difference between these two opinions? What's the practical difference? So Ikan Binayihu, Dir Tzafinhu Mirtzaf. So let's say you break the kli completely. You don't just simply make a hole in it. So I think this is Cal's point. Let's say you break the kli completely. So there we say that because you might not, if we allow you, so it seems here the Gzera does apply Cal, even in case you break it completely. Here we're saying that if the concern is that if we allow you to break it, you know, and that works, so then we're going to say, you know what? Once we allow you to break it completely, then there's a concern that you might not even break it so well. So then Abayi's Zera is still relevant, But in a situation where the person broke it completely, apparently there's no concern that someone's going to say that, oh, because someone broke it completely and fixed it and he had to wait till nightfall, so also when I immersed it, I don't have to wait till nightfall. Because if someone breaks it completely and they reshape it, everyone's going to know that it's a different type of kli. So no one's going to make a mistake and say, oh, he's using it now before nightfall. So therefore, when I immerse it, I don't have to wait till nightfall. So I think, Cal, based on this, it would seem that the gezeira of Tuma Yishana would apply whether you break it and make it to a new kli, a different new kli, or the same new kli. It doesn't really make a difference. The concern is that once we allow you to break it and fix it, it would seem that that would apply in all instances. It might be the only time that it might not apply is according to Rava in a situation where it doesn't come in contact with a corpse. So there, apparently, Rava is saying nobody will make a mistake and say that when I completely fix a kli, I don't have to wait till nightfall. And people are going to realize, but if I immerse it, I will not have to wait until nightfall. Okay? So that's with the metal kalim. Now the Gemara asks, V'idach maihi, what's another gzeira? Remember, there are 18. What's another gzeira? Did not. Hamenich kalim tachas atzino lekabel bahem meg gishamim. Echad kelim gedolim v'echad kelim ketanim v'afilu kli avonim kli adamo kli glolim posli mesa mikvah. So what are we saying? If you place a kli under a pipe, so to receive the rainwater. So let's say you made a pipe already. You made a pipe, and not for the purpose of collecting water. You initially made a tzinor. You fixed it in the ground. And then you sort of, join the pipe together. So originally it wasn't a kli. And then, let's say rainwater is fall. You didn't make it to collect rainwater, but there's a pipe. And the rainwater is falling. Let's say, so now you have a situation where there's rainwater, it falls down the gutter. And you put a kli, a utensil, a bowl, under where the water is falling to collect the water. So the Mishnah says, Echad kelim gedol v'echad kelim ketanim, no matter what type of kli it is, if it's big or small, no matter what the material, posim es hamikvah. So the rabbis say that would invalidate the mikvah water. In other words, the bowl, even though when you made the drain, whatever, the gutter, that wasn't for the purpose of collecting the water, once you place a bowl under where the water is falling to collect the water, that's called maim shuvim, that's called drawn water, and that would invalidate the mikvah. That, in other words, that would invalidate the mikvah if you pour that water into the mikvah. Again, a mikvah that's less than what's called 40 sa, a mikvah that's not kosher yet, that's not quote-unquote kosher yet, and you pour water into it, that's pasul, so that would invalidate the mikvah. And the Mishnah adds, echad hameniach v'echad ha-shocheach, this applies whether you place the vessels intentionally, the bowls to receive the water, or whether you place them there, you forgot. Either you placed them there and you forgot to leave it there, you left it there for whatever reason, and you didn't realize, and water came there. Divrei Beis Shammai, that's Pinei Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, matim b'shocheach. Let's say, I don't know, Beis Hillel says for some reason you placed a bowl, you know, underneath the gutter. You didn't realize your intent was not to, so the water should collect there. And it did collect there. So Beis Hillel would say you can use that water. It's not considered Mayim She'uvim. Amar Rav Meir, Nimnim V'Rabba Beis Shammai al Beis Hillel, Modim Beis Shammai. Okay, so we said that there are more opinions. Basically, there are more people who sided with Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai's opinion won out. Umodim Beis Shammai b'shocheach b'chatzar shu tahor. And Beis Shammai admits to Beis Hillel that a situation where you forget kalim in a chatzar. Let's say you forget the kalim, you just put a bowl in your backyard, and then rain falls on it. Then that water fell into the mikvah. That would be tahor, and that's not called maim she'uvim. Rav Yossi says the dain machlokas b'mkom omedes. Rav Yossi says that no, Beis Hillel Beis Shammai, there was no consensus, and their debate still stands. This the case of shocheach, where you forget to place the bowl under it, where Rav Meir said that basically Beis Shammai wins out, Beis Hillel concedes. Rav Yossi says that Beis Hillel did not concede. Now the Gemara is going to try to now explain in what way did they actually debate. Amar Rav Mishasha Devei Rav. So Rav Mishasha said in the base manager of Rav Amri, they said, everyone agrees that if they place the bowls when they see it's cloudy and it's about to rain, and then even if it didn't rain right away and it rained a little bit later, and then the water collected in the bowls and the water from the bowls poured into the mikvah, then you would be tamei bishas pizur avim divriya kol tahorim. If let's say there are no clouds at all, let's say you put the bowls under the pipes for whatever reason, and there are no clouds at all, and then all of a sudden there are clouds and it rained, and the rain fell into the water in the bowls, and the water was poured from the bowls into the mikvah, everyone agreed it's tahor. Lo nech leku ela shenicha bishas kishur ovim v'nispazru v'chazu v'niskashru. The only debate is when what? You placed it when it was about to rain, and it was threatening to rain, and then it stopped. It didn't rain. And then what happened? A few hours later, totally unrelated to the first cloudy situation, it then rained. So that's the debate. Basila says that your initial intent, you originally want to collect the water initially, but once it stopped raining, you had no intent anymore, and therefore the water that falls in is not considered Maim She'uvim, and that's Beis Hillel. And Mar Savar Lo Batla Machshavto, Beis Shammai says no, you intended to put the bowls in there to collect water, so it stopped rain. It wasn't cloudy, and there's a new sort, the new clouds and new rain. So what? You initially intended that the bowl should collect the water. So for this water is called Mayim She'uvim, drawn water, and it would make the mikvah possible again if the mikvah was less than 40 sa'ah. Ula Rav Yossi, Damar Machlokas, Daimim Komo Medes, Batsri Lahu. And according to Rav Yossi, who says that their debate is still in existence, in other words, there is no consensus. So Batsri Lahu, now you have less than 18 gezeros. Right? In other words, what do we say in the Mishnah? There were 18 gezeros where there was a debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel on what happened, that we decided like Beis Shammai. So if, according to Rav Yossi, there was no consensus, now we're down to 17. What was the additional one? Which gezerah replaces this gezerah? According to Rav Yossi, this wasn't decided. So he says, Abba Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak afenos kutim nidos me arisasam bo bayom gazru. Girls from who were kutis. So kutis, they were people who came in the population exchange when the northern tribes left were exiled from their land around the 720s, and kutim came to Eretz Yisrael. Their status as Jews are doubtful. It's debated whether their conversion was real, their conversion was not real. So apparently, this is actually from Maseches Nida. So we're going to learn this in depth in 7 more years. So we're going to get there. All of us, we're going to get there. So the Gemara Nida discusses that for various reasons, a young girl who is a kuti, we treat her as becoming tamei, even if she is, for some reason, even if she bleeds and she's a baby and she bleeds. I don't know how practical, practical this really is, but they said that we treat her, and again, it's a broader conversation, but basically we treat a kuti who, there's a debate as what type of blood renders someone a woman a nida, what's the minimum age? So for various reasons, we said a kuti is even a young child who's a kuti who bleeds is still considered tamei, and the kutim were not strict about this law, and because they weren't strict about this law, so the question is, so since they're not strict about this law, so therefore we would consider all foods that the kutim would have as potentially tamei, because their young girls would touch it and maybe they became tamei, and so that was a discussion as well. That's a broader conversation, but that's suffice to say that's the halacha. Okay, we'll stop here. Good. All right, everyone, have a wonderful day. We will, for those who can, we'll resume tomorrow at what time? 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock. All right. Take care, everyone.
Rabbi.
Yes.
Rabbi, excuse me. Just I didn't want to interrupt you, but Herbie's question about why just the metals.
Right.
The quote from the Tosis Yomtov, it says that it seems, I don't know how practically true this is either, but metal is easier to refine.